So, hey everybody, and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future we all hope for. And every week I'm joined by wonderful people from within the EV Cafe. First of all, JC, back again.
Described as wonderful people, which is a first. Thank you, Paul. I really appreciate that.
Well, great to be here. Got to get you in the right mood, JC. Got to get you in the right mood. And we're talking every week to innovators, pioneers, and collaborators that are just lighting up our world. And this week is really no exception. We are talking to the Queen of Fleet, Lorna McAteer. Hooray!
Good morning.
Good morning, Lorna. Now, Lorna, listen, before we get to talk to you, we have to have a little look at your backstory, of course. We only, according to the world of LinkedIn and the internet, what have I found?
That's a dark place.
Well, the most interesting one was the one we probably won't talk about, was a project manager for Farmers International or something like that.
Oh, Countrywide Farmers.
Countrywide Farmers. I can just imagine Lorna walking around in wellies in a field,
I'm sure, you
know, sorting out where the cows go and all that sort of stuff.
Your private life's your own.
But early in 2008, she became involved in Fleet. And since that day, really has just been on a J curve all of her own in terms of awards and achievements and all of these kinds of things. Not forgetting, ultimately, it might not be the most important one, but the Barbara Cox Woman of the Year, the Green Fleet Outstanding Contribution Award. But also some wonderful life things over time, mother of twins and completed, ultimately, a 3,000-piece jigsaw puzzle. I'm in awe. The internet's a wonderful place.
There you go.
But, Lorna, look, I mean, of all of that, what makes you most proud? I mean, get right. What makes you most proud of all of those things?
You know, I get asked that question a lot, and I think the answer changes each time. Because I don't think there's any one thing that makes me most proud. It's when I reflect back and I think it was that project that I got over the line despite all the challenges. Or it was, and interestingly, when I look back, it's all the little things. It's the smaller things that suddenly it's like, do you know what? I'm chuffed I did that. It was the perseverance bit that goes with it. It's the sense of achievement that comes out the other end. And sometimes it's the really silly little things that you just go, do you know what? That was what it was all about. Just one person coming up one day and saying, thank you, I learned something today, out of a conference of over 300 people. And it's like, do you know what? That is what makes this. That's what keeps me going. It's those little wins. It's not the big one. It's not the big achievement. Although, don't get me wrong, those awards were great. It's the little things that build up to it. So I don't think there's any one proudest moment. I think it's just getting through things and finishing things.
Let's be honest, Lorna, we all know that you were so proud of completing that jigsaw puzzle. Let's be honest.
I was. Family thought I was bonkers. It was a Harry Potter one. It was just all sky. And I sat there with all the pieces lined up and trialing them one by one, literally just went through them until they fitted.
So for me, knowing a little of you, and your approach to Fleet and all of that kind of stuff, that doesn't surprise me in the slightest, that approach. But look, I mean, go back all the way to the little girl that skipped her way to her primary school, or maybe on to, probably didn't skip by the time you got to comprehensive or whichever kind of school you went to.
I don't know, I still skipped. I like school.
So what was it that in your formative years that got you to this, you know, person that's able to deal with incredible detail, but able still look up and take the helicopter view as well, to be strategic yet detailed and all of those kinds of things? What formed Lorna McAteer?
I think there were a few things. So firstly, incredibly young and supportive parents. So there's not much of an age gap between me and my parents at that time. So they grew up with me, is what my mum always says. You know, they learnt as they were going, and it was just a case of we kind of just muddled our way through life to a certain degree. So putting that into perspective, my mum was 16 when she got married, 17 when she had me, and my dad was only 3 years
Wow.
older than her. So that's what I
Wow.
mean by young parents. And
Yeah.
then really early in my dad's life, so I was only 9, my brother was only 7, he was diagnosed with cancer and we were told he wouldn't live. But he did. So those kind of things shape what it was. And it's and then also a childhood f sorry, not a childhood friend of mine. It was my parents had a friend. And there was an incident one time, and I remember it, and he doesn't even remember it at all. And he just turned around and said, "Oh, you can't do that. You're a mere female." And that was it. That was my early red rag to a bull. It was like, "What do you mean I can't do it? Of course I can do it. How dare you?" And I don't think it was a female, but it was just the fact he told me I couldn't do something. So off I went, and that was it. Set out to prove it wrong. And then I had that a couple of times in my career. A boss at one point employed me and said, "You know, if I had my choice externally, I wouldn't put you in the job either." And it's like, fine, let's set out to prove you wrong. It wasn't meant in a nasty way. It was just a factual, he'd got these things and that was what he was doing. But I guess it just shapes when you've got parents that say you can do anything you want, and then also confessed to me that they were worried that when I got out of school, because school said you could do anything you want, you're quite equal, they were worried I was going to hit the world with a bump. So I did, and then just moved the bump. And it's just looking at everything life can offer. So when you've got your dad that nearly died, financial problems in the recessions when you're young kids and everything else. We then moved. My mum followed the tax office when it moved from Harlow in Essex. So despite the accent, yes, I was born an Essex girl. Moved to the
Explains a
Midlands.
lot.
I learn every single Essex girl joke just so I could upset everybody else when they try to say one to me. I learned all the punchlines. And we moved up to Telford, followed the tax office up because it was the only job at the time. Dad was a paramedic, so he liked saving people's lives. So I guess that small sense of satisfaction and we do all we can for everybody else, that's where it's all come from.
Look,
Wow.
Lorna, you mentioned the word equal, and that's really interesting to me because you're somebody who I've spoken to many times about the role of women in business and the role of women specifically in fleet. Do you feel that you are treated as an equal, or have you had to almost retrain men to view you as equal?
So I'm going to answer that in an odd way. I'm not treated equally, but that's because I've earned my status and I'm now looked up to by everybody else in the industry.
So that suggests that it hasn't always been the case.
I've never found a barrier,
Okay.
if that makes sense. But I don't know if that's my outlook because I never saw them. And if it was there, I just moved it anyway. So, again, early in the fleet career, I went to an event. It was the IAA show in Hanover. And there were three blokes, one of which was your colleague, Paul. It was Mark Lovett. And there were three blokes. And they were all trying very sensitively, without upsetting me, to ask why I was a female in this industry. Because, as you'll know, I started in the commercial side of fleet as well. I didn't start in cars. I started in the big heavy trucks and the vans and the conversions and getting lorry loaders designed and getting all that on the road. So I didn't start with the easy stuff. I started with the enjoyable stuff and the fun stuff. So see, Paul's nodding. He's happy bunny now.
Love a
Vans are fun.
van. But do you have an engineering or technical background? Because, jumping into
So I used to be an IT project manager, so I just had a different way of looking at things.
So why does Lorna McAteer like them big? Why do you like them big? That's the question.
Size matters, doesn't it? You know, I said that at the conference last week, and they all paused in the audience and went, "Yes, I did just say that." It's just different, isn't it? And the more challenging it is, the more sense of satisfaction you get when you achieve something. And achieving something doesn't always mean success. It means you might fail, but actually you've learned the lessons that you can teach everyone else, so you don't do it again the next time around.
So great. I'm going to jump in right there, because you've just said that wonderful word that I have learned so much from, which is fail.
Yeah.
What has, I mean, so you are looked up to and people do respect you. And quite honestly, they might even be forgiven for being slightly in awe or even afraid of this perfection that is Lord.
There is no perfection.
But I know this. I do know this.
The
illusion of perfection. Yes. So burst that bubble for us. What things, you know? I mean, it doesn't need to be in work either. You know, because John and I have lived life with big mistakes outside of our work lives that have impacted who we are today. What mistakes has Lorna made in her life that you've learned from and brought into who you are today? Where have you failed?
I don't know where I've failed, because I don't look back at any of it as being failures. Everything I've ever done is a lesson. And even when you say, oh, I regret doing that, I don't actually regret it, because I always look back at it again as, well, that was part of me. And if I hadn't done that, would I have learned these lessons? Would I be me today? So from disastrous ex-boyfriend relationships and kind of handing a house over to somebody and just walking out to, I don't know, bringing up kids and sitting in a kitchen crying, thinking, I can't handle this. You know, it all shapes me one way or another. And therefore, I don't look back on any of it as being a mistake. Yeah, sure. There might be one or two things in my life I think, God, I really wished I hadn't done that, because I didn't like me at the time either. Whatever it was I was doing had changed me to such a point I thought, I don't like this. I need to be out of this. This isn't the normal me, and I don't like it. Mm. And so you change. So are there mistakes? Yeah, probably loads, shed loads. And then loads of people will tell me I've made more than I probably think I have as well.
But I suppose that's, you know, I think JC always words this question much, much better than me, because you touched on there a few places where life has been really tough. So describe for us a time where Lorna's had to dig deep, where you really have had to kind of, you know, because I can imagine those moments of sitting there in tears, not knowing how to deal with your kids, or relationships that have gone hugely badly wrong, and what's it caused you to dig deep? What situation has caused you to dig deep, and how have you come out through that?
There's been quite a few of them. So one that obviously sticks in the mind for several reasons is when I first got into Fleet. So I'd been dabbling around in Fleet a little bit beforehand, keeping my project manager title. So I was a Fleet project manager. The boss had just left, so he'd engineered his retirement. You know, I'd been given Fleet. There you go. Got this. I'd not long been back from maternity leave. And the whole company was shifting. They'd sold bits of it off, which is how I'd ended up in the role, because all my colleagues were tooped out. So I was just last man standing as much as anything else. And I was shattered. I was surviving on 2 to 3 hours sleep every night with the twins. Hubby, I can't remember at that point if he was at work or out of work. Because he worked for 6 months. Oh, that was it. He worked for the 6 months. First 6 months kids were born. Then he ended up out of work. He's been out of work ever since. So there was all changes. Stress was getting on at work. New bits coming in. Having to learn it all. And I'd gone into the office. Everybody was stressed out and wanting resources. But I went and asked for half of an FTE to help me out. And I'd volunteered to do an extra bit. You know, take this piece of work, but can I have half an FTE with it, kind of thing? The answer was no. And I remember coming out of there and all the others went, did you get it? Because they really thought I was going to get the resource. And I went, no. And their faces triggered me. And that was it. I couldn't, I had to walk out of the office. I drove home in tears just because I thought, I can't get through this. I cannot do this. I've got someone else telling me, I don't know what I'm doing. I can't do this. I'm not supporting them. You know, when you get that internally where they're stressed as well. So all of that was coming through. And I can't even remember how I got through that, but I did. And it's a point in time that I always look back, because no matter how tough it gets now, I look back in that and go, well, you got through it once before, you can get through it again. And that's how I get through that. So that's probably the first really defining moment in work that just helps me realize I can get through this. So I touched on there that hubby has been out of work ever since. So there's some really bad periods, completely bedridden, then gets up marginally a little bit. So bad back, herniated discs causing all sorts of issues. So yeah, there's a moment where my team think I'm quite heartless when he collapsed on the bathroom floor and couldn't move, and I just went and got a pillow, put it under his head, got a blanket, made sure he was warm, got the painkillers. I can't lift him, I can't move him, there's nothing I can do. So there's the practical side of how you end up caring for someone as well. And then raising the twins all through that. So I used to have a very tough routine very often of cooking the evening meal one night, feeding hubby, prepping the food for the kids for the next day, getting them up, getting them to the childminders, who would then feed them the dinner that I'd cooked and collect them from school. And literally just this routine that continued. So I used to get to a Friday thinking, thank God it's the weekend. Then I used to get to the Monday thinking, thank God I'm back at work. So just very different challenges.
Lorna, what's fascinating is here is somebody who goes into the fleet industry, which is a tough gig. Being a fleet manager is difficult. You don't just say, oh, well, I'm a fleet manager. I'm going to keep doing the same old thing time after time. But you've got so much other stuff going on in your life, which you've just brilliantly articulated. And then to add to that burden, if you like, that load that you carry, you say, I'm going to transition a fleet to electric. What's wrong with you, woman? I mean, did you not have enough on your plate?
Like making a difference.
But what was it that sparked that interest in transitioning the fleet to electric? You were going to make a difference anyway because you bring efficiency, you bring the best practice. What was it that said, I'm not only going to do a bit better, I'm going to revolutionize how we manage our fleets and run our operation?
Because it's the right thing to do.
And that matters to you?
Yeah, and not just that, if I can, I will. So within fleet, I could do this. So I was going to do it. And then when everybody else, as we've already said, when they all turn around and say, no, you can't, you go, yeah, watch me. Don't get me wrong in this. I've had some brilliant support all the way through my career from one of the guys at Massey. He'd only been there a few weeks. Then he went to run HMC, the crane, HMF, sorry, HMF, the crane company. He invited me down, and basically I had a physics lesson again so that I could learn how the cranes work and how vehicles were built. I had lots of people that, because I went, well, how? They went, well, we'll show you. So everybody forgets in this industry, whether you're male, female, young, new in, or whatever it is, everybody's willing to help you because they don't actually want you to fail. So the more you try and do things and the more you show an interest, and I used it to my advantage that I was a female, because be sitting around a table, there'd be a whole bunch of conversations, nobody would ask what the hell it was going on, and I'd be the one to say, sorry, stop. What did you mean by that? What was that in that? What on earth is a bang bang? And somebody was sat next to me going, I'm so glad you asked that question because I didn't have a clue either. So it was about not being afraid to ask what seemed like a really, really silly question. And that's something I do all the time now, almost play up on it in some respects, but you learn from it.
You must have, as a really experienced sustainability leader, you must spend an awful lot of time working with people in your teams and who need your guidance and support. Is that an area of your life, mentoring and sharing that experience, that is a burden that you carry, or is that hugely rewarding?
If you'd asked me 5 years ago, I wouldn't have thought it was anything I could do. And then I don't know if it's the age my kids have got to, or the age I got to. But it's almost like a switch went. And I had a graduate come into the team on rotation. And they got stuck in a meeting with something. And I asked some questions. And they said to me, how did you do that? I said, well, you have to remember that, because he was frightened of asking questions. He always felt that he was going to be put down or something. And I just asked the question of the team member, oh, this is what you do. I'm not familiar with the form that you use. Can you explain it to all of us so that we understand what it is? And it was just a different way of couching the same question, which is, I don't know what you're talking about. Can you tell me? Mm. And I just said to the graduate, it was putting it in their terms. They are the experts in their areas, and they will happily tell you if you ask. It's not about being frightened to ask the question. And I suddenly realized I had insight to give other people. And then I've ended up mentoring almost by accident. So Kate Tyrrell had a friend. He'd gone to her, said, do you know anyone in Fleet? I've landed up with a Fleet role kind of thing. And she went, ha, I know someone. Go talk to Lorna. And he just comes everywhere with us now. I rope him into all sorts of bits and pieces, and he's absolutely loving it. And I reflect back as well on that, thinking, yeah, it's right. Actually, he wouldn't have had those opportunities that I'm giving him for quite some time. Hmm. And so I'm bringing him into a world probably on a fast track pace, but I enjoy it, and I think that's just because I enjoy seeing people succeed.
And I think it's that kind of mindset that you've kind of walked through all of your Fleet, that wanting to make a difference, that wanting to improve, that wanting to invest in other people, that's kind of shaped who you are. I'm kind of interested. How did that person get formed? But I'm going to leave that for a minute. You can have a think about that and maybe throw something in later. But Optimize Prime. It was. We're talking about zero emission. It is the coolest named project ever. Do you know? It sounds like something straight out of Transformers. So Optimize Prime, talk me through that project and what part did you play, and how do you see that shaping the future for transport, really?
So I was at Royal Mail when that project came around. Okay. And the project kind of came to us as, oh, we just need to get some EVs. Actually, the project had an exam question, and that exam question was, what is the impact of commercial vehicles on the grid, mass market? You know, when it goes mass market, what's the impact on the grid? That was the exam question. And someone had approached Royal Mail. My boss and I had heard about it, but Royal Mail walked away from it to start with. And I was like, but this is a no-brainer. And there was that little internal fight that kept going on with myself and my boss. And it's like, this is a no-brainer. How do we get to the right people to make sure we get involved in this project? Which we obviously did at some point and got through all of that. And the project involved 8 different companies, 3 of the different Hitachi companies, which most people don't realize there are as many different companies as there are, 2 distribution operators, so UK Power Networks and SSEN. And then for the first time ever, an NIA-funded project involved 3 private sector businesses. So that was Royal Mail, because we had depot charging, British Gas or Centrica, because they had home charging, and Uber, because it was on-street charging, public charging. So they went to 3 big companies that had volume of vehicles that we could do a mass market experiment. And the project was interesting, because while we were doing the project and building the case and everything else, we said this project is one of the few ones where it will be too late for it when it's finished, but it's too early for us to do it because there were no vehicles available. It was a really interesting project. A lot of us knew the answers already before we even went into it, But you needed that evidence to come out at the other end. So you could then give that to government, give that to Ofgem, give that out to the analysts, and give that out then to the consultants who pick it up and go with it. But it was a phenomenal experience. Have you ever had eight big corporates in a government body trying to sign off paperwork? I can sit there and sympathise with Sam Clark going through everything he's been going through lately. Just getting everybody. I remember being in a locked room, going through word by word the contracts, literally arguing over bits and pieces. But it wasn't arguing. We just literally sit in there practically, and, well,
Disgusting.
this one doesn't work for us because that one doesn't work for you. But right, what's the compromise? So it was all about compromises, all about the lessons learned, and I think it was an eye opener for Ofgem as well in some respects because, A, they had a bunch of women that walked into the presentation room, not the traditional blokes, and they also had some private companies who got just as feisty back with them. So when they were trying to put constraints on them, I remember arguing back, thinking, "Oh my God, I've just blown this project," because I argue back that it was our risk we were taking at Royal Mail, it was our money we were spending, and there was nothing coming out the other end of it for us. We had nothing to gain from that project, unlike a lot of the other companies who had a product to sell at the end of it. So it was an interesting project, and the reason I wanted to do it was to show it could be done. And again, once you get the lessons, how do we help others on that journey?
And I mean, it's a brilliant project. How do you see it? Because now the project's over, right? I think it's had its wrap up and all of that sort of stuff. Where's that data now? How is it being
It's all
used? How do
publicly
you?
available, and funny you should mention it, was only yesterday somebody else said they were doing some research, and I went, "Have you tried?" and pointed them in the direction of that research. So it's still valuable data.
Absolutely. And sorry, just a point of order. Because we're the acronym police here. NIA?
No idea.
NIA funded. I National Investment Authority?
Might not be NI, it might be NIC, NIC. I don't know. It's one of those abbreviations they use in the industry
So
for
there
one of the
was
funding
somebody in
things.
the
There was
background doing
someone
the
in the
funding.
background doing.
But I guess it just proves that, these things sit in the background and we all kind of go, Was that? Was that?
Well, not just that. If you think back to it, that was a massive project of collaboration.
Absolutely. And
One of those
that's key,
first
isn't it?
big collaboration pieces. And I'm going to quote my own quote properly because Paul misquotes me. It's, we're in it together, aren't we? And we only win when we all cross the line together.
That's what I say. We only win when we all cross the line together. That's what I say. And I always say, Lorna McAteer.
I know. My daughter's helping me make a t-shirt at the moment.
Now, you've
It's
got a
actually
thing
got an
about t-shirts, haven't
I
you?
have is that it's actually got an obstacle course on it. And we're doing the obstacle course on the front with all the little EV challenges and everything else, and then that quote is going to be on the back.
Brilliant.
Lorna, you've talked about an awful lot of stuff that you do. And Paul and I, we are champions of well-being and good mental health. I have a question for you. How do you avoid burnout? Because, you're a high achiever, you have very, very high standards, you work incredibly hard, you travel all over the country, in fact, the world, championing the values that you have. How do you as a person keep going and avoid that almost inevitable crash?
3,000 piece jigsaw.
Yeah, another big thing that you've got to try and achieve.
I'd love to say, and this is why you've asked me the question deliberately. I broke at Christmas. So why did I break at Christmas? I didn't realize I kind of knew I was breaking, and it started, or I started recognizing it on the EV rally last year because I was sniping at my support crew and some of the others, which isn't me. And I was finding I had no tolerance, little patience, and I was struggling. It took me till Christmas in kind of recognizing I wasn't me. Also took a bit of a cold that floored me again for a while to realize, yeah, this isn't right. I usually recover so much quicker from these kind of things. And a few trips to the doctors to realize actually I was suddenly deficient, vastly deficient in vitamin B and D. So quickly went on to those. Then there was the conversations of I still don't feel right, body's creaking, all this kind of stuff. But again, some of that was the vitamins. Got to Christmas and I didn't want to come back to work. I did not want to come into the office. And that was because there was a lot of pressure on me. When you're leading the field, everyone still looks to you to lead. Whether they do or not, I don't know. But in my head, I got to Christmas and the world was tough. We'd had all of the stuff last year where I was helping everyone find solutions between the advisory electric rates and how to reimburse people because it's so different for everyone. And there are all sorts of options and did all that work, did all the work in changing my voucher value, everything to just make sure we could still afford vehicles and still make this transition happen. And was happily sharing my papers with everyone and giving advice out. And I got to Christmas and I thought, I have no answers for 2023. It's still going to be tough and I have no answers for anyone. I don't know what I'm doing next. And that's when I broke. Just exhaustion as much as anything else. So went into work, chatted with some of my team, chatted with the boss and actually said, don't give me any more at the moment. I'm stuffed. I am literally, you know, there is nothing else in my little resilience bucket. Whatever, there's more going in than is coming out the other end. I just cannot get this, do this anymore. So very supportive company, very supportive boss. Went to the doctors a few times. We started debating, was it menopause? You know, am I the right age? Is this menopause? Is it this? And it was in having the conversations with the doctor. You know, I'd got my daughter over there with strep A at the time as well. We'd got all sorts of other things still going on. And I'm chatting away with the doctor and we're going through it, looking at the options, what the possibilities are. And then she says, oh, you could just be burnt out. And I went, yeah, but I've been doing this for 10 years with hubby bedridden and the kids and da 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 da. And she went, let me rephrase that again. You are burnt out. And it's, oh, yeah, okay.
Let me be more direct.
Let me be more direct. You're burnt out. And so we went on to sertraline for a bit just to help with the sleeping and all sorts of other bits and pieces. Stopped drinking the alcohol as well and kind of literally just stepped back from everything to try and get some more sleep. I wouldn't say I'm out of the woods. I would say I now recognize the moment I start to slip because I do, even now. With everything going on, we're in conference season. It's been busy since May. As you said, I've been here, there and everywhere and doing the day job and trying to support all of my team. We've got their issues as well. And you just go through everything. And then you realize, oh, I'm starting to go. So what I've learned to do now is just stop. Don't try and do everything. You can't do everything. I've learned to delegate more. I've learned to recognize, no, I now need to do another 3,000 piece jigsaw or make candles or make other things, whatever it is that you just need to switch off. So you guys recognize as well, because a couple of you reached out. It's like, you're not talking on WhatsApp. Where are you? You stop posting on LinkedIn. It's like, yeah, I'm just digital detoxing. I'm just stepping away from everything. Because, you know, all that FUD is depressing. Because you're just like, oh, really? We've got to fight that rubbish again? So it can get you down if you keep listening to all the news because you just can't believe half of what's out there. And so you have to step away from it, sort yourself out, and then come out all guns blazing again.
Lorna, thank you. I think you've just helped a nation of fleet managers breathe a sigh of relief.
We do this every month on the Fleet News at 10 that we do. And we sit there, and it's almost turned into the therapy session because we just sit there going, I haven't got the answers. You know, it's just, I remember years ago, somebody saying, how do you cope? And I was like, what, other than drugs and alcohol? You just have to acknowledge it's going to be tough. Yeah. And when it's tough, work out who it is you can talk to without being a drain on them. Don't be a drain on them, but who can you talk to? Who can you reach out?
But
who
Lorna,
can you get
let
to
me
help you?
Let me caveat that with don't be afraid to be a drain, because we all, well, I certainly like if I'm talking with somebody, I'll often reach out to John. Obviously we have a lot of time, so if the day's tough, and we have tough days, right? In all of our little worlds, we're either busy, burnt out, rejected, frustrated, annoyed, upset. Yeah, I've got a hotline to Joe. He's on speed dial. But we do, and you know, the amount of times I go, oh, sorry, mate, you know, or and vice versa, mm-hmm. and it's like, no. That just but I totally hear
yeah,
what
but
you're saying.
Recognize,
be careful. Yeah.
Recognize there's also two types of people. You have zappers and sappers.
Zappers and sappers. Ooh.
You have zappers and sappers. And I went, one of my teams at Royal Mail, I don't know if they've ever forgiven me for it. I said, you got two lots, zappers and sappers. I went, you lot are all blooming sappers. You're sucking my energy out of me because, you know, it was just, they got it.
It was made here, people.
It was. But do you know what, Lorna? It's so good that mental health or it's interesting. Simon Sinek or Sinet says, you know, it's about mental wellness, about, you know, because we have this, such a negative view about mental health, because I don't think less of you because you've had a struggle, right? I think it's almost like it was inevitable. You should be struggling. I mean, it's almost like that would be normal. Otherwise, you'd be something like superhuman. But the fact that you just gives me more respect for the battle that you've got, the context, the twins, your husband, the challenges around decarbonisation, the huge projects, and a huge jigsaw puzzle. It's all of these things, you know, and it's comforting to know that actually, We're all in this thing together. We can all walk along, and we do need to watch out for each other, no matter who we are. I think it's really important.
We do, and John's heard me say it before. It's we break because we want to make a difference, so we just keep going. We don't actually want to stop. It's really hard for us to stop because then we feel we're not doing what we should be doing or what we want to be doing. So you'll probably find that all of those that are achieving, the ones really pushing themselves through it, making that difference, are the ones that also in the background are breaking, because we want to make the difference, so we don't want to stop.
Was there a time in your life where you felt useless and it's that this is now
every other day?
Joking aside, is that real? Do you feel that you're not able to do? Is that a big challenge for you?
It's not that I feel useless. It's that I feel guilty when I stop because I need a break, or I haven't got the energy to do something, or the momentum, or I look at the house and think, oh, I still haven't decorated that room. My bedroom's a tip. The garden's a mess. Whatever it is, and you think, I'll do that. And the brain is doing it. The brain's working out what it needs to do, and that should go here. And I just physically cannot get up and be bothered to do it. So it's not I feel useless. There are days, though, when, yes, I have those moments where you've listened to the news. So, or last week, the conference in Miami, absolutely phenomenal. I may have now a bit of a reputation around the world of saying it as it is, but, you know, there you go. There was a little bit of a myth-busting side of things, and I just went fact one, fact two, fact three, gave all the reasons and everything else, and then fact four has been mistranslated now as who cares. But what I'd actually said was, you never cared before, so why do you now care that it's an EV? You know, when you're talking coal bore or car parks collapsing or roads being damaged, it's like nobody ever cared about that before, but they suddenly do because it's an anti-EV bashing statement. So I've got a reputation of just saying it as it is and mic drop moments, I think. But most of that conference was really, really positive. Naturally so, because all the people that are attended want to make a difference. So you're already in your little positive bubble. But then there was someone else there, a bit like me, who's got a dose of reality on things as well. And it's still going to be tough for the next 10 years. The supply chain still isn't going to be right. We've got shortages of silica in the world, which explains why I can't get hold of windscreens right now. You know, there's all these little bits and pieces. The world is in a recession. It's just not this little island's bubble. It's not this government causing the problem. Every single country is having the same issues. And when you're all in that same boat, it's very hard to find a way through and come out of it. So it was a nice reminder of how things are out there. And so part of me came back with it. Anybody goes to whinge at me now, I'm just going to say, suck it up, because we've really got it easy over here compared to everyone else. We've had a supportive government, despite what the media say and Twitter and everything else. When it comes to this transition, actually, they've been quite supportive. When you look at what all the other governments are doing, this one's supportive. And that's why we're number three at the moment in this transition in the world. You go out there and you look at the numbers. They separated UK from Europe and we had a little bit of banter, whether that's politically or geographically. And then I said, I'll take it, though, because we're doing better than Europe. So I'll have that. Thank you very much. But it's it comes with its ups and downs. And I think that's the only reason I feel useless is because that's the world I just talked about. And there's me. And I can't change the entire world as much as I would like to. And as much as I'd like to make that difference.
I'm just going to wrap up from my questions, Lorna. What does the future look like for you? You've clearly a huge amount of experience and delivered an awful lot. But somebody as good as you has an awful lot more to give because the world needs Lorna McAteers. What is it that will be your biggest contribution going forward, do you think, to our world of sustainability and decarbonising fleets? Or is there something else?
Apart from the fact Dolly the sheep did eventually die, you know, let's go into clone and get another one of me. That would be scary on the world.
Is that mentoring then? I mean, developing that mentoring thing, is it that you're part, it's a knowledge transfer piece for you and that you're enabling many more people with your ethos, work ethic and your grim determination to make things happen that is the way to maximise your reach?
It's a combination of everything. So despite the fact you guys say, yes, I'm good at it, I'm leading the way and everything else, I still have that little imposter devil sitting on one shoulder. Mm-hmm. And then on the other shoulder, I've got the egotistical maniac that says, yeah, you're brilliant at everything you do. So, you know, they're constantly in argument with each other. And again, going out to the US, I had a lot to give and there were a lot of people talking to me. And these are CEOs of companies. These aren't fleet managers. I've sat at COP26 in a meeting where everybody's gone around the table going, I'm minister in Canada for this, I'm minister in New Zealand for that. And they got to me. And so I introduced myself as, well, I'm the fleet manager that has to make it work. And it sets a tone as much as anything else. So the challenge I've got in what I do next, I enjoy what I do. I like the doing bit. And throughout my entire career, I've never necessarily sought the next level up. It's just happened. At some point in time, something has felt right and something's moved. Right now, I haven't finished what I'm doing. Whatever it is, I haven't finished it. Now, whether that's because I still need to get my team sorted, I still need to prove that National Grid UK fleet in its entirety is all done and dusted and on the right trajectory and it's all there. I don't know. I had a coach who described me before as, you know, I was the driver of my own little bus. And then we laughed and joked and went, actually, no, it's a reinstatement vehicle. And I'm getting the stuff out the back. I'm carving the path. I'm laying the track. And then I'm driving along it saying to everybody, come follow me. This is the way we're going. I don't know what's next. You're right. I'm enjoying mentoring and giving back. My challenge is I still enjoy my job. I still enjoy that bit. I enjoy learning about what the rest of the world is doing. I want to do more in influencing government. And the trouble is, I need a clone. There isn't enough of me to do it all. So I have to try and work out which bit is it that really is going to make that next difference? And is it bringing others in with the right attitude, or is it the government piece? At some point, I think I'm going to have to acknowledge it's not doing my day-to-day job and signing off car orders, that I have to leave to someone else. But that's the bit that keeps me grounded.
Do you know what?
That's the bit that enables me to have a story when I'm on a stage talking. Yeah. That gives me the authenticity to say, here I am. I don't just become then another consultant on a stage without the depth of knowledge anymore. Don't look at me.
Consultants
like that.
Are lovely.
A reference to you.
But Lorna, it's interesting you touch on the government piece because, you know, we're in a time where everybody's looking for somebody to blame, you know, for either lack of progress or lack of effort.
That's easy. Blame yourself, because if you aren't doing anything about it, then there's only you to blame.
Yeah, but I guess people think that they are doing their best and not getting the support from government that is needed, and we're not going to solve all of that. But given a magic wand, what wish would you cast as your
ball that works?
A crystal ball that works. That's sort of cheating, really.
I don't joke about that.
For me, the words I've used before, you've heard me use them on the various places, it's about consistency. All we need is a consistency of approach, and at the moment, especially in this country and some of the others, we don't do long-term strategies and stick to them. We're very knee-jerk reaction. We go by whatever the social media popularity is. We seem to ignore facts. So for me, all I'm after, just give us some consistency. And, you know, I don't want the 2030 ban to move. Whether we achieve it or not is almost irrelevant.
Yeah.
It doesn't make a difference. It's a target. And what the government's been brilliant about with on that target is they've said, here's a target. I don't care how you lot get there. Find your own path to get there, but here's where you need to be. And that gives us the freedom to do it how it suits us in our individual places. Whereas if you're forced down a route, human nature actually says, don't force me to do that. A bit like telling me, no, I can't do something.
How about you go and do it? Other people grumble about it. But Lorna, I think that for me has been the personification of this chat, that, you know, we've got lots of things that are barriers or challenges or things like that, but your pleasure is to smash through those. And it's been lovely to get a real insight into the backdrop of Lorna, the real Lorna.
I don't know if we'll ever find the real Lorna. Ooh, I'm just me. Whatever it is, wherever it is, that's just me. You pretty much get what you see.
Yeah, no, and that's the joy, Lorna. You're making a tremendous difference. So, it, you know, as one of those key drivers for you, a box to tick, you're making a difference wherever you go, both to individuals, both in the background, in those one-to-one mentoring sessions, those opportunities that you give people, and that's lovely and exciting. And also you're making a difference on the world stage now, and you know, to Fleet across America's just waking up to this whole EV transition. And I think, you know, your time will probably be well spent over there, because they need help, just like we all need some help. So Lorna, I'm really grateful. I know John is too, for the time that we've been able to spend with you today, and for sharing some of those difficult bits, those journeys that aren't wonderful, but also giving us a little bit of an insight into the things that make you happy and give you satisfaction, and where you're going. Glad that the job's not finished, because we want you around for as long as possible. I sense we might lose you to some form of government one day, maybe.
Maybe. No, I'll just keep doing what I do, influence from the outside.
Okay. Well, we'll
have
see.
That nice agnostic approach. It doesn't matter. Just, you know, see how you get on.
Absolutely. Lorna, any final thoughts? What thought would you like to leave us with today? It's a tough one,
isn't it? There we go.
Final thought. A proverb, maybe.
Final thought. Problem? No.
Proverb, not problem. Not problem.
No, I'm just going to go into a line of T-shirts now, I think, with all my statements and phrases. I used so many of them when I was in Miami, from the, you know, right vehicle, right job, right fuel type, right time, to the right charger, right location and the right numbers, to the only win when we all cross the line together, through to, I think I'm inventing some new ones as well. I now have this fact one, fact two, fact three, fact four, who cares, kind of new one that's going out there. So I just need a new line of T-shirts, and I think they'll be, no. I think it's one of those things I get asked a lot of the time, what advice would I give or anything else? And it's just start, just do something. Doesn't matter how small it is. Just start, do something.
Get started.
Get started. Cross that line. Cross that start line.
JC?
Yeah, my final thought is a request. Lorna, could you kindly think about a T-shirt? XL, if you would, and just, I'm a Frank Zappa.
I would be very grateful. So, in summary today, we have had a wonderful chat with the lovely Lorna McAteer, and we've learned about jigsaws, we've learned about T-shirts, we've learned about sayings, but more importantly, we've learned what it's like to be human in a very powerful and exciting and energizing and challenging role as a fleet manager in one of the biggest fleets in the UK. One of the others. There's others bigger, Lorna.
I've worked in the biggest.
Oh, you see, damn.
Size isn't everything.
No. We heard it here. Size matters. We know about that.
And going back to jigsaw puzzles as well, totally sustainable. I then recycled it and gave it to someone else to do.
Look at that. The fun never stops. Lorna McAteer, thank you so much. Please do connect in with Lorna on LinkedIn. Although she's as she said, she's not been as prolific there, but you know, there is so much online to find out about Lorna and everything that she's done, the projects that she's been involved in, Optimize Prime and won Barbara Cox Woman of the Year and Greenfleet.
Board director for the AFP.
Board director. We have
chairman for the electricity infrastructure working group for Zemo.
Yeah, keep going. But there's so much more about Lorna McAteer. We've only scratched the surface, so we may one day come back to the Lorna McAteer. But Lorna, thank you for your time today. Really appreciate
it. You're very welcome.
And so if you want to... Yes, absolutely wonderful. And we'd just encourage you, check out the other podcasts on the evcafe.org. Link with us on LinkedIn. Follow Lorna on LinkedIn and all of our other socials. But at the end of the day, don't let anybody get in your way and go and make a difference and know that actually being open and transparent and vulnerable will help you along the way. Well done, Lorna. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Lorna.
Have a great day, everybody.